this is your Polycast for Thursday, March 9th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a debate over gun bills draws a big crowd at the state capitol, and the candidates for mayor of Minneapolis meet for a forum. Lots of people showed up at the Capitol yesterday for a hearing on two bills that would loosen restrictions on carrying firearms and the use of deadly force in self-defense. Supporters of the changes say the bills bring the state closer to having true Second Amendment rights. Opponents argue they would make Minnesota more dangerous, and there's no need to change current laws. Peter Cox has the story.
It's not every day that Black Lives Matter St. Paul and the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association agree on an issue. But two bills that would loosen restrictions on carrying and using guns brought them together. Here's Dennis Flaherty with the Peace Officers Association.
Our tremendous concern about the bill is officer safety and the threat that it poses to all cops across the state.
And here's Chantel Allen with Black Lives Matter St. Paul.
Laws and bills are supposed to be created to protect the rights of American citizens. Aren't we too citizens? Stand Your Ground is just another way for people to get away with murder.
Both Allen and Flaherty testified at a House Public Safety and Security Committee meeting. They spoke against a proposal to expand the rights of Minnesotans to use deadly force to defend themselves and their homes. Republican Representative Jim Nash of Waconia is the author of the bill. He says it would clarify state law and put on the books here what courts have ruled in other states.
I believe firmly that self-defense is a human right. It doesn't know anything about color. It doesn't know anything about geography. We each have an individual right to defend ourselves. And that is a very important thing that we need to note. And for that reason, so we can clarify the rules of engagement here in the state of Minnesota, that is why we have this bill.
The bill would remove a person's obligation to retreat from a dangerous situation. It would put a presumption in law that someone breaking or sneaking into a person's house or occupied vehicle poses a violent threat. It allows people to use deadly force to stop what they reasonably believe is a threat or to prevent a forcible felony. Dakota County Attorney James Backstrom spoke against the bill, saying the law already allows for reasonable self-defense and protection of property.
Do we really want to presume that a homeowner has the right to shoot and kill an unarmed teenager who sneaks into their garage to steal a bicycle, as would be the case under this proposal? I think not. This law basically gives the citizens more rights to use deadly force than our law currently gives to police officers with less review.
Nash is also the author of another bill that would take away the requirement to have a permit to carry a firearm. It would allow anyone who is not prohibited from having a firearm to carry one without the current requirement of training and a permit from a local sheriff. Scott Rausch is with the National Rifle Association.
We as an organization and our thousands and thousands of members across Minnesota believe an individual should not be required to pay a fee or obtain a government-issued license or permit to exercise his or her constitutional right to carry and possess a firearm. It is that simple. It is a fundamental right.
John Pletz disagrees. He said 3 years ago he was in a car with his daughter Michelle, her estranged boyfriend, Tim, and their 8-month-old child.
We were driving Tim home after a dinner meeting. Halfway to Tim's house, Tim pulled out a concealed handgun and shot her point blank in the head, killing her.
Pletz said loosening the conceal law makes it easier for anyone to carry a gun.
It's simple. Watering down of existing, sensible, proper, and reasonable gun laws and regulations like this bill makes it more likely that someone you know will be injured or killed by a firearm.
Both bills were laid over for a possible vote later. Governor Dayton has not yet said if he'll veto either bill. Covering politics, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
A plan to break up a Twin Cities transit funding partnership is in trouble among disputes over how to dole out the money that's left. Tim Nelson has more.
The county's Transit Improvement Board is a combination of Hennepin, Ramsey, Washington, Anoka, and Dakota counties. It helps fund 5 major transit lines. Dakota County has long held it isn't getting its money's worth from the transit sales tax it collects and hands over to the board, known as CTIB. Now some counties want to break up the partnership so they can raise more sales tax revenue on their own. But each county has a veto, and Dakota County says it wants a better deal for the disillusion. Former legislator Mary Liz Holberg, now a Dakota County commissioner, says her colleagues talked it over and aren't leaving without their money.
There was no support for the proposal.
The board voted to break up anyway, even if Dakota County vetoes the board's abolition, saying Dakota County should accept a compromise. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The election for mayor of Minneapolis is 8 months away, but there already appears to be strong interest from the public. Several hundred people turned out last night for a candidates' forum where incumbent Mayor Betsy Hodges and her challengers spent 90 minutes answering questions. Matt Sepik has more.
So far, Betsy Hodges is facing five challengers this year. Councilmember Jacob Fry, State Representative Ray Dean, former NAACP President Nikema Levy-Pounds, Tom Hoke, who most recently ran Hennepin Theater Trust, and filmmaker Aswar Rahman. Topics covered at Calvary Baptist Church in South Minneapolis last night included a citywide minimum wage, public safety and policing, and affordable housing. Hoke, who was deputy director of the city's public housing authority in the 1990s, says the next mayor needs to be a regional leader in planning.
In order to solve the affordable housing crisis, you have got to look at it on a metro-wide basis. And the mayor of Minneapolis needs to be the chief advocate, getting all the mayors of the other cities to take their fair share, because that is a huge problem for us. And we are not really an island.
Rahman, who's 23 years old and a first-generation American born in Bangladesh, says making rent affordable in Minneapolis starts with getting a handle on the budget, especially property taxes.
That's how housing is getting so expensive. That is the core of the problem, and I really wish that that's what we'd focus on, because saying that we're just going to build more and more and more, that's only going to drive up gentrification faster and faster. That's not the solution. That is not the solution.
Rahman says he opposes mandating a citywide wage floor, saying it'll drive out businesses. But only he spoke against it. On the other hand, Dean pointed out that he alone among the candidates helped pass a minimum wage measure. That was in 2014 when Minnesota lawmakers voted in a gradual statewide increase, leading to the current $9.50 an hour for large employers.
One of the reasons why we're doing well as a state when other states aren't doing quite so well is we have a very active economy in the state of Minnesota. And I believe that everybody that works full-time in the city of Minneapolis should get a livable wage, and that wage right now is determined to be $15 an hour.
Fry says he has long supported a city minimum wage that's higher than the state's, but he took time to explain why he opposed holding a referendum on the issue last year.
When you legislate via referendum, you're forced to set the language maybe 6 or 7 months in advance, and when you do so, you can't change it. You have to get it set. You have to go through the Charter Commission. You got to go to the full council, and then there's a vote. And in every piece of major legislation that I've ever been involved with, there's major changes that happens in the last 2 weeks alone.
Mayor Hodges reiterated her support for a higher citywide minimum wage without a carve-out for tipped workers. And she decried a Republican-led effort at the state capitol to block it.
Preemption is bad governance. Republicans love local control until local governments are doing things they don't like, in which case they introduce preemption bills. It's not a good way to govern. It's not a good way to govern. The president's doing the same thing to states and local governments that Republicans are doing to local governments around the country.
Levy Pounds, a civil rights attorney, garnered the loudest applause of the evening when she called out the city's political establishment for being late to the game on wages and many other issues of racial equity.
It's not just the Republicans that we have to watch out for. It's DFLers who are comfortable with the status quo, who have had years to make changes to these policies and practices that would benefit all of the residents of Minneapolis, and not just jumping on the bandwagon when it's politically expedient to do so.
The candidates will appear together on the November ballot, where voters will again pick a mayor through ranked choice voting. In 2013, they chose among 35 names. While additional candidates could still file for this year, such a lengthy ballot is less likely because the filing fee went up from $20 to $500. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.